Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to FFS. I'm David Coulthard.
And I'm Eddie Jordan.
Today we're going to be talking about an eventful Australian Grand Prix. I've just got back from it. It was won by Carlos Sainz, of course. And we're going to talk a little bit about the off-track controversies that have been surrounding Formula One. And the anchors have some suggestions of how to get more rookies onto the grid. I know that's something that's very important for you, EJ. But before we do, what have you been up to this week?
Thinking about going home, so I'm coming back to haunt you. I'm coming back to drive you crazy on those bicycles. I want to have you buy me lots of coffee at coffee stops, and I'd like to catch up on your latest romantic escapade. So why shouldn't I do all that?
Well, yeah, not long until you're back. I'm looking forward to that.
like hell.
Australian Grand Prix, it's one of the great Grand Prix. I was there, got in a little bit earlier than normal, getting late Tuesday night because I was pretty active on the corporate circuit. And you know, I'm surprised you weren't down there, EJ, earning a pound.
Well, you know, life flies by. And remember, there's a very famous saying, MMTT. And that applies to very much everyone who listens to our program, because one way or another, it affects them. MMTT, anchors, yet another little scenario, more money than time. And I'm very fortunate. I made
it's lucky for you.
Listen, DC, if you hadn't had as many divorces as you've had, you might have had a little bit more left in the kitty. But anyway, I don't think the listeners need to know about that.
Well, thanks. You've just said it. Yeah, but come on, let's talk about Australia. Were you ever successful down there?
It's the one circuit, and it's the one place that reminds you beyond any doubt of Ireland. Because virtually everyone you speak to, they're fans of the Jordan team. Why? Because they were Irish. And, you know, we know what Van Diemen's Land, if you ever listen or hear the song The Fields of Athenry, that is exactly what happened. All the people who either one reason or another were put on ships and ferried off to Australia to work. So during the famine time in particular, there was a lot of movement of Irish people who were immigrants and they were starving, and that is why there's such a very, very strong content of Irish people in both Sydney and in Melbourne, and that has lasted to this day. People still feel that their great grannies or somebody like that is connected to Ireland, and they have that love affair for it. So for me, Australia was easy for Jordan to get sponsors there. We loved it. The fun was great. And of course, you know, the different parties, the Crown Casino and the people that were involved, they were magic times. That was one of my very favourite races. And I heard you say recently, races that started with an M were very important to you. And that was Montreal, Melbourne, Monaco and Monza. And, you know, all of those circuits, absolutely brilliant. So, yeah, Australia is one of my real standout circuits, I have to say.
Yeah, it was a great event, and they really delivered once again. What a performance from Carlos Sainz. He's only done two Grand Prix this year. Obviously took time out in Saudi to have his appendix removed, but he started so well. And I've been trying to claim a little bit of Scottish credit just off the back of you singing the Irish praises, because he has a lovely girlfriend, whose name is Rebecca, who's from Scotland, a wee bit further north than from where I grew up. But he just seems like a demon behind the wheel right now. And I wonder how much of that is just being, you know, happy in his life prior to the information that he was going to be replaced by Lewis Hamilton, and how much of it is the fact that he's now fighting for the best seat he possibly can get outside of a Ferrari.
Naturally, being quite a considerable amount older than you, I'm very friendly with his father. And as soon as that race finished, I sent a note to Carlos Sr. and who was there. You saw him hugging him, embracing him at the track, just under the podium. And as a father, you sort of drawn to that sort of affection, because he has been so steadfast behind his son, and it's remarkable and very admirable. So I dropped him a note, and within sort of 12 hours or so, whatever it took him to read the phone, and he was the other side of the world, he sent me back a really nice note. And just to say, I said, look, this is actually a legendary story, where the guy gets out of hospital, has a major operation. In most doctors would tell you what that happened is impossible. So, but then to go through a grueling. Now, I did see him get out of the car. And yes, of course, he was very, very careful how he got out of the car. For sure, he was in pain during that race. But I think the determination inside the head, and what his father would have said to him as he went through that moment to get into the race, because I did not think, I thought Berman was going to be doing another race, I'm absolutely sure about that. He didn't, even though despite the unbelievable job he had done in the previous Grand Prix. Sainz, for me, he livened up my day. I loved watching the Grand Prix. I loved the fact that he could control it. He moved ahead from Leclerc. I heard one of the commentators, not you, David, saying that, do you think that Ferrari should allow Leclerc to pass? And the answer, my God, don't ever do something like that, because this was his race win. He's looking for the best seat he can get. And at the moment, please remember, he started off in Toro Rosso. And I would say Red Bull will be, if they were to lose somebody like Max, or if they were to replace somebody like Perez or somebody like that, you know, you have to say that Carlos would be one of the key people. However, do not be surprised if you see an all-Spanish Aston Martin team next year. Bear that in mind where we first heard it. Okay, log that down and move on.
Well, that would obviously be uncomfortable for Lance Stroll, because it would mean, unless he changes his nationality.
I'm telling you, I believe that if there is not a place in Red Bull for him, he will join Fernando in Aston Martin. That's what I believe. I have no real hardcore evidence, but it's a gut feel, and very often my gut feel is a little bit different to other people's gut feel, and sometimes I get it right, sometimes I absolutely screw up. So you can take your choice on that one, David, but it does sound nice. It's very romantic, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think Carlos is driving beautifully. I don't doubt he was in discomfort after the race. You know, any medical operation is going to take it out of, you know, a person, but he's incredibly fit. And fear focuses the mind, and a big dose of adrenaline can take away any discomfort a driver has. In my experience, having driven with some injuries in the past, like broken ribs. But yeah, great results. Fantastic. I was on the flight back with a lot of the Ferrari personnel, including Fred. And it was just great. You know how it is on those you know, A380s, you've got the bar at the back and everyone comes together. And it was just a wonderful, sincere celebration. And it was lovely to see Ferrari get some success, because it's been, well, Singapore was the last time with Carlos, and it's been an incredible winning streak for Red Bull. And it's nice to see others getting a little taste of that. I want to ask you, Eddie, about something else that happened during the weekend. in Melbourne, which I've never seen before from what I'd consider an established Formula One team. And that was the fact that we found out that Williams didn't have a spare chassis. So when Alex Albon crashed turn six in free practice, they did what I felt was the right thing in terms of giving the car to Alex because he's been stronger than Logan. But how can that be in modern Formula One, other than cost of production and delays? But, you know, I understand how they didn't do it because they were lazy. They've done it because they just couldn't physically get a spare chassis there. But did you ever go racing in that situation?
David, I raced when you were allowed a spare car. So not alone had you got two cars for the two drivers. As you know, you wiped out most of the field in Spa that year and everyone rushed back to get their spare car. And yet there was another chassis sitting in the back of a truck, completely undressed. By that I mean a bare monocoque, freshly painted, but just sitting there with the minimum of things hanging off. Most teams would have a monocoque that would have already the steering arms in, it would have the steering column in, they would have the suspension on the front on it, and they would have various different aspects of the structure of the monocoque that would take less time to get to a race-worthy position on the track. I'm absolutely staggered, and I'd like to hear what Williams have to say, because I think it needs to be answered. It's too critical. Look, how great have this team fallen? And by that I mean, you know, we know about the Rothmans days. We know about you and Damon Hill. We remember Mansell. We remember Prost. We remember Senna. We remember the great drivers that were there. For heaven's sake, man, what has happened to Williams? I've got to look at myself and think about this. And Patrick and Frank. And Frank, of course, sadly is no longer with us, but Patrick is off in Sardinia. We need him back. We need somebody back. It just needs direction. It's impossible to accept that a team like Williams can go to a race, which they went to in Australia, with only the chassis that they had for the drivers. It's unacceptable.
Yeah, I think that James Vowles has definitely established himself well as team principal. He's facing the hard questions rather than hiding from them. So, you know, I have to believe that given time, he will be able to turn that team around. They've got some good technical team that have joined some. Pat Fry, for instance, that I worked with at McLaren, very experienced. He's been at Ferrari, Benetton back in the day, and I've no doubt that he will bring a steadying hand. I think it's just lack of investment for several years, and the new owners, of course, have been trying to restructure. I just hope they do enough to be able to keep a hold of someone like Alex Albon, who clearly has been the standout driver there. What would, just on that, would you have made the same decision, Eddie? Would you have pulled Logan out of his car?
Yeah. But what I'd like to know, how seriously damaged? Look, with modern technologies and the way carbon, and the way you don't need necessarily to go into an autoclave to cure it and stuff like that. And there's all sorts of mechanisms and materials now that kind of can fast forward. I just want to know how badly damaged the chassis was. Was it that they just wanted to give Albon the run and sort of, well, there's no point going to all ridiculous efforts that may never work, or it mightn't be safe enough, or whatever it is. I would like the team to come and answer us the questions, maybe FFS, and say to us, look, the car was comprehensively damaged. We couldn't repair it. The pickup points for the suspension were gone. That's always a killer. But if, for example, it was a monocoque damage, there are ways of fixing it. So it must have been much worse than that. There has to have been a lot of pickup points that they couldn't actually successfully and safely repair.
Yeah. Well, actually, I would love to get James Vowles on the podcast. I think he would be a very good listen. So let's work on that. The other thing that came out of Australia, the Alonso Russell incident. Now, what was it? That's the second time that Russell's unfortunately gone out on the last lap. It happened in Singapore. The stewards decided to give Fernando a penalty, not for dangerous driving per se, but just, I think they called it irregular driving. What do you reckon, EJ? Do you think he gave him the old
brake test?
Not brake test, but yeah, you know, in slowing down early, he obviously caught George out. He's got a bit of form. Do you think that's just all part of motor racing, or do you think there should have been something a bit stronger?
Difficult to know. I saw it immediately. It was semi-suspicious to the eye. But remember this, that it is Alonso's position to defend. And we saw what he did with Perez in Brazil. So he let Perez pass him so he could get quicker down the straight to get the slipstream. He is a very, very clever driver. There's not many out there on that grid who could actually take on Fernando Alonso in mind games, because I think he is above everybody else. So what happened? Only he knows. But it did look to me as if the car slowed. If that's the case, then it's up to the driver behind to be able to look out for that. The driver behind is always the person that has to use the initiative, because he has to balance everything in his mind that gives him the safest option. That was a big accident. That could have been horrific. But, you know, as you said, George will learn from that. I think he, and most of the grid will be very, very, very aware when they come up about fighting with Alonso. However, now I'm going to add something to that, David, and that is, I really get so upset when I watch a race and I think Alonso has finished fifth or whatever it is, and then he's demoted three places. I remember Bernie, it was one of his pet hates. Never, he'd say to the timekeepers and the stewards, never give me a set of results 30 minutes or an hour after the race with a different set of positions, because it's not fair on the television, it's not fair on anyone, and it confuses the crap out of everybody. And I think, in my opinion, if they felt something was wrong, they should have said, you've got a two-place grid position penalty at the next race. But don't take the race position from them. Why the hell should they do that? It's nonsense. It's not fair on the journalists. It's not fair. We've done a report. You've done guys trying to make planes, and they file their reports. And suddenly the editor in the Daily Mail or somebody says, shit, man, we haven't got the results right. And so we have to do the report again. It's nonsense. For heaven's sake, Formula One, will you get a grip? The race results is the race results, and if there are penalties, they come in the future.
Well, I remember standing until almost midnight when there was the fuel flow issue with Daniel Ricciardo. He was the only Australian to finish on the podium in recent years, if I recall. And then they took that away from him at almost midnight. It was ridiculous, and I agree with you. We need to be able to, you know, there'll always be exceptional circumstances if it's to do with legality of the car. But when it comes to driver incidents, yeah, the race result is what it is, and then apply penalties thereafter.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It was a bad weekend for Mercedes. Two cars not finishing, engine failure, very rare engine failure for Lewis Hamilton, and then that accident for George. Toto made the comment that he felt that he wanted to punch himself in the nose after getting that double DNF. I understand he must be very frustrated, but you know, as a team principal, as a shareholder, you get the funds in place, you get the people in place, but you're not actually directly responsible. I know it's one team, but you know, I can't see how Toto can hold himself singularly responsible for reliability or the speed of the car. He's just a very important part of an otherwise bigger team.
Toto's in a difficult space at the moment. I suppose he's not allowed to talk to his wife, Susie, which will come on to us maybe at another stage in the show or whenever, because obviously...
What are you talking about? When we all flew back together, we got off the plane and Nice, Susie was there to meet him. I didn't see him not talking to his wife.
No, but please, if you're sharing a bed with somebody, you never know what you're going to be talking about. How can, you know, an FIA... let's not talk about that, because I think you'd know an awful lot more than I do.
EJ, listen, let's be clear. There's the Finnish joke, and the two Finns sitting at the bar, and one turns to the other and says, "How was your day?" And the other one turns around to him and says, "Are you here to talk or are you here to drink?" So I'm using that when it comes to the bedroom. Are you there to perform or are you there to talk?
I leave you there to handle all of that answer, David, because you are the number one expert in that area. So let's move on. I think Toto, you know, as these races go by, I have to think that the superiority that Mercedes had is not evident and it's not there to be seen at the moment. And as a result, they are getting pasted. I mean, they're not being beaten. They're getting hammered by Ferrari. Those insurgents of McLaren were very strong at the weekend. And the people who were very, very lackluster, in my opinion, was Toto, who... is very strange because he's such a massive professional and it will have hurt him for sure. What happened in Australia, he will want to forget that as soon as possible and he will bounce back, make no mistake, but it will have hurt him for sure.
Yeah, well, that pain that he's suffering is a little bit of pleasure for Lando Norris, who got third place. That's his 14th career podium and he's now overtaken a driver... did Nick Heidfeld drive for Jordan at a certain point?
Of course he did. Of course. I think he had better results than you had in the Jordan. Oh, no, you never did drive for Jordan, did you?
Sorry. I never did drive
anyway,
for Jordan.
Go on.
But anyway, Nick Heidfeld...
Listen, I had all the German drivers. All the German drivers came to Jordan because we were Irish. And then that started with Ralf Schumacher, Michael Schumacher, Frentzen, of course, then Timo Glock, and then Heidfeld. I had a great time with them, but I just couldn't sell enough of them to Ferrari. That was the problem. And so therefore, they didn't make me as rich as I was hoping to be.
Right. Norris, 14 podiums, no wins. That is now a record that he would like to not have. He's only not won because he's not actually been in the right place at the right time. You know, Daniel Ricciardo got that victory for McLaren in Monza. Lando was probably quicker on that day, but held station dutifully. Didn't win the sprint race in Qatar, which went to Oscar. He could have had a win. So in my eyes, he is a winner. It's just the stats don't show that.
First of all, I'd like to take you to task. Winning a sprint race is not winning a Grand Prix. David, they are not even close in my book. One is playful carry-on, getting a few points, and the other is a hardcore Grand Prix where you have to prepare and do things differently. I think sprint race needs to be called to question. I think it's not providing what it should have provided or what they set out to provide, and I have a solution, perhaps, to rookie drivers and sprint races. So we'll come on to that at another stage. However, David, you may recall I sent you a message on your way out to Australia and I had this lovely letter from a very nice girl and I pleaded with me, could they get Lando to send a message? And he is revered, isn't he? He's loved. He's a good-looking boy. His parents are gorgeous people. He is everything that every father would like to have in their son. He is a really good example, well-behaved, well-educated, and knows his place. I just want to see more fight there. I want to see more viciousness. I want to see, could he have won any of those 14 Grand Prix? I think he might have. He might have won one or two of them. But I just want to see more action, you know, real fight, real determination. And I think when he gets that, remember what was the standout feature of Nigel Mansell? It was belief. He believed he could beat anybody. And the fact is that his talent was possibly in certain areas nowhere near as good as some of the guys that he was beating because mentally, his mind, no one could pass him. That was it. And so I just want to see more of that wild belief and commitment and passion in Lando, and you could be surprised. We could be looking at another British world champion because he's that good.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
But he also has to take care. He has to take care because Oscar is no slouch, that's for certain. I'm super impressed how he's started his second season, because very often second season in Formula One, as you well know, David, is really a huge transition, because you've got rid of the, if you like, going to the party, and now you're in the hardcore game and you have to perform. And I think Oscar is doing that. And as we've often said with Anne and Mark Webber, he will have good people there guiding him through that.
Yeah, I think he's brilliantly represented by both. But especially the insight that Mark has of recent times, how a Formula One team operates, I think that is a big, big help to Oscar and cannot be underestimated, in my opinion. Right, we've got to move it along. There's been a lot of legal sort of ramblings and, you know, basically a lot of controversy. We've had the Christian Horner situation at Red Bull, which some people seem to want to keep in the media, but I still believe should be a private matter until such time as someone stipulates otherwise. We've had the FIA president, Mohammed bin Sulayem. He has been cleared of any wrongdoing in an internal investigation with the FIA. And then last week, Susie Wolf, who's the managing director of the F1 Academy, launched a criminal complaint against the FIA relating to statements they made about her last December. So there's been a lot going on, EJ, and I just wonder, there's one school of thought that says there's no such thing as bad publicity, and when there's been big traumas in Formula One, you know, loss of life and horrible situations like that, that the audience has grown because it takes it off the back pages and puts it on the front pages. And we've had Lewis Hamilton ask for more accountability and transparency across the board. I'm always a bit curious on that, actually, because it's like people ask for things whilst they're not having to do it. You know, it's almost like lead by example in being transparent and open rather than just doing so whenever there's a controversy. But where do you sit in all this?
I don't know whether I should share this, but I had correspondence with Christian during the week when he was in Australia, whereby I think he thought I had said something, which was after the time of the KC said something, and I was able to outline to him that happened, or anything I did say was always well in advance of that, because I have every particular script written down that I've discussed about it. So Christian is under a bit of pressure, but I think you've been out to dinner, so you'd be best able to see his own position. But, you know, am I right in thinking it's calming down a bit? Or, you know, the KC, he has been proved that there was nothing to answer for. So if we believe in a judicial system, some people don't necessarily, but I have to say that was the decision of a KC. You know, all this vibe, David, I find it disturbing. I don't find it anything to do with Formula One. I want to hear about the drivers. I want to hear about new technology. I want to hear why Williams didn't have another car. I want to hear how the great teams, you know, some of the teams have made real big improvements. And we have to talk again about somebody like Nico Hülkenberg, who's your neighbour and used to drive for us at, Force India and stuff like that. And he's been scoring points on a regular basis, and it's remarkable. So let us move away from that. The only thing I would say that when we talk about Christian and Red Bull, this should have been handled privately. It should have been handled behind closed doors, and there should have been a correct solution to any of these problems. But to wash this stuff out in the public domain, it's a fest, isn't it? Every magazine, every editor in the world of any magazine and paper, if something comes up about Red Bull and Christian Horner, they're on it straight away. And as you rightly say, back pages to the front pages, that's a real issue.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate little episode in Formula One's history. It'll be interesting to see what, if anything, comes out with Susie Wolf's action that she's taken.
Susie is such a competent girl. You know her particularly well, long before she married Toto. Let's not forget, we talked about Williams. I remember seeing and being super impressed with Susie Wolf driving a Formula One car, Williams. She is a proper girl, and she's feisty, and, well, she's Scottish, which probably helps being feisty, but a wonderful girl. So if she feels and has felt slighted, both reputationally and various other ways, business-wise, she's every right. And I would promise the FIA, they will need to have a very comprehensive prosecutor, lawyer, whatever, because Susie Wolf would not be going into that kind of situation unprepared. Similar to Mohammed, I mean, Mr. President of the FIA, he's under some serious hassle but he's been cleared. The ethics committee of the FIA have cleared him. And again, some people are calling to question who are the ethics committee and who are they and what do they hear and was there any opposite side to it? So, look, we will never know, and I don't think we should take sides. I just wish all of this just evaporated and we got on with what we want to talk about, which is hardcore motor racing. What do we think can happen? What's going to happen in the next race? Who's going to win the championship? What happens to Carlos Sainz's future? Where does Albon go? Does he go to Mercedes? Does he sit where he is? Look, there's a lot of intrigue out there. They are the things that I think our listeners want to talk about.
Well, one of the things that our listeners would like to talk about is how to fix the fact that there's no rookies on the grid right now. And we've got a few options that have been presented to us, which, Eddie, I'd like your opinion on. Option one was from Big Mark, and he has said, with the drivers and teams complaining about too many races and the rookie drivers not having any seats to jump into, do you think F1 should make it mandatory for the team reserve driver to do one or two races instead of the main drivers? This would lower the demand on the main drivers, but give the reserve for each team a couple of races to impress. I guess maybe in the sprint, but I don't think you could do that in the Grand Prix. But anyway, let me give you the next option from Jonathan Wright. In the 1980s, there were often 28 to 30 cars on the grid, which was a greater spectacle than the current 20-car grid fielded by 10 teams. If teams were required to run three cars each, with the third car being driven by a rookie, this would bring a lot of talent through and just require the cost of building a third car. Well, it's not only the cost of building a third car, yeah, the cost of shipping it around, but let me move on to option three.
I can add to that.
Yeah, let me do option three before you answer. This is from Adam in Devon. What if sprint races were for the team's reserve drivers only, one per team? This would create a sprint championship and a showcase case for future stars. Points also contribute to the constructors' total to keep them interested. I actually think that's quite a good option, that the sprint was only for reserve drivers. But over to you, Judge Jordan. Which one of those options?
So why are you creating the question and then answering the goddamn thing yourself? You've stolen my thunder again. You always like to come first, don't you? You just want to be on top of the podium.
I did not steal your thunder. Or whatever you pronounce, thunder. It's a
thunder. Thunder. It's a H in thunder.
I've just quickly given my input as we go along. So okay, let's go through. Option one from Big Mark.
I have to say, these are so cleverly written and they make such sense. And I have to believe that if this is indicative of the kind of listeners we have, then we have to really look. These people must be a lot more intelligent than us here, DC, because they've come up with good solutions.
And I agree.
So Big Mark, I'll say to you that, sorry, that's not going to happen. Of the three, I have to say that the last one, Adam, was it Adam? Adam from Devon. He's very close to what I am proposing and have proposed in writing some time ago. The second one, Jonathan, I'm sorry, it's just too expensive. You can't believe, because if you're going to bring a third car, you effectively have to bring the bits and the parts for another car. So that's the fourth car. And then it's the travel, it's the transport. You could say we stick it in a truck and we bring it to Monza. So maybe there is a position there we can talk about. However, I'd like to come back to think what I think could and should happen. I think sprint racing is a failure. It's shambolic. It shouldn't be in the weekend for the Grand Prix. It's distracting. It's taking it away from what we're really there to do, to see who wins the Grand Prix. So now, rather than lose it, I would propose having four Grand Prix, which are four of the races that are key in our calendar. You might have to leave Monaco out, because what you don't need is extra people. Monaco is kind of a really tricky place for a young driver to go to. But say you talk about Spa, Silverstone, Monza, and then a choice of somewhere else. Let's put it in Monaco. So for me, you know, when you have tennis and you have a Grand Slam, these would be, for me, the Grand Slam events. And what I would like to propose to happen, so it doesn't need extra cars, it doesn't need extra parts, that a sprint race, which can be shorter, because really all you want to do is see the start of the race and see how people qualify and people... So you give them a chance to get the feel, soak up with the atmosphere of the Saturday. And we have a sprint race at four events a year, and no driver can enter that race if they've completed in over 10 Grand Prix. So it gives some of those guys who are unlucky that got squeezed out, some of the guys who are on their way up, and it gives them a chance. You can make it, they have to do 5 Grand Prix, 10 Grand Prix. It doesn't matter what that figure is. But I'm just saying you can't have it open-ended and anyone who is a bit of a star and is just on the cusp and looking for a drive come there. It has to be for young. You could put an age bracket on, and I think that's definitely unfair. And I'm not sure it would get through compliance or something like that with the competition law. But anyway, that's my proposal. My proposal is that we pick 4 races, get rid of sprint racing, and make these sprint races into a 4 of them per year in the circuits that have been loyal to Formula One for the longest time. And I think that's a way of repaying it. And I do believe this. It needs to be doctored. I'm not saying that's the full complete package, but that's my view, how I think this could be handled.
Yeah, well, interesting, EJ. And as always, we appreciate our listeners sending in those points of view. I think at this point, it's probably time to wrap this particular episode up. So any more suggestions on how to improve Formula One, do send them in. And EJ will politely or impolitely, depending on his mood, let you know whether he thinks it's a good idea or not. Remember, you can email us at ffs@whisper.tv or follow us at F1 for Success on social media. Eddie, you as FIA president, now that would be a scary thought.
Now, I'm not sure what your favourite drug is, David, but I tell you what, you need to go back and get some more, because I think you're talking absolute balls. You haven't got a clue. I am not president of anything. And as well as that, been going around and having people pick you up and putting you in private planes and all sorts of extravagant things. That's neither my style. And I'm sorry, there's far greater and more clever people out there who have a wealth of knowledge about Formula One and indeed motorsport generally than I do. And I will just be, I'm just happy being on the show with you, DC. I've reached the climax of my life.
EJ, I've never heard such a waffly denial. That means for sure you're running for FIA president. I knew it. Right.
I'd like to have a little bet with you. What do you think? What is your money? What is your treatment here?
Yeah, okay. Well, we can have that discussion off air. EJ, as always, thank you very much. And looking forward to seeing you in the studio soon. So until then, I'll leave you to sign off.
And that's me, DC. Nice to be here.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.